sentence, regardless of which declension a noun belongs to, it can fill any slot in the grammatical construction that any other noun can fill. So there's just a various, actually three major sets of patterns by which nouns form their endings, but it has nothing to do necessarily with their genders, although there are some general parallels there. Yes?
Are these endings and the
the os is in the second declension, and yes, it's the only endings you'll find in the second declension for a masculine noun. Now there are second declension neuters that vary slightly from this, and that information I think they introduced you to some of those in the next chapter, but. The neuters are also classified. There's a second declension neuter that has that type of ending, has a slightly different ending than the. In fact, they look quite a bit different with the nominative and accusative forms, but you'll find in the genitive and dative they're the same. That's why they're called second declension. We haven't got to genitive and dative yet, so when we get the paradigms completed, then you'll be able to see what the parallels are. But for masculine or feminine nouns, those endings you see on theos are the endings you'll see in the second declension. They're very consistent. And the neuters have a slight variation to it. Okay, and then you see in the first declension you have several variations involved, basically dealing with whether you have an alpha or an eta type vowel in the ending. Some have alpha, some have eta. That's the major difference in the first declension. And then there are first declension masculines, which vary a little bit also. Dotes is an example of those. And you have a sigma there on the nominative ending, and you'll see that also in the genitive they have a form that looks like the second declension form. So those are a little bit different, but most of their forms parallel the rest of the first declension forms. I'll give you a little bit of a chart on the board here today that'll help you see all that together in one view. Okay, then the dictionary form we want to take note of. For a noun, the dictionary form is going to be its nominative singular form. And so when you're looking up a noun in the dictionaries, in the lexicons, they will give you the nominative singular form. Now, if you don't happen to know what the nominative singular form is, if you're looking at the Greek text, for example, and all you've got is a genitive plural form or something, and you're wondering what the nominative singular form is, you'll be able, in most cases, to predict what the nominative singular form is after you've learned these paradigms and been exposed to Greek for a while. In other words, you'll see the genitive form, and you'll say, oh, this has to be such and such. So you'll begin to be able to discern that almost without question. There are some places where there are potential ambiguities. Some of your exercises pointed that out. And then, but a knowledge of the vocabulary will solve that. And so very seldom will you have to be finding yourself grabbing the analytical lexicon and some of these words that you would have to now. When you get done, you'll know what the forms are and you'll know what to look up, and it'll save you a lot of time. Okay. I'll say a little bit more about these dictionary forms in a bit after I put some other things together in Chapter 6. Any other questions in Chapter 5? Yes?
Are we going to be asked on this to determine what declension certain words are in?
Let me think. Let's put it this way. Be familiar. I can just double check here. I don't know if I asked them quite that way. I don't mind telling you what to prepare for. What's that? No, I don't want to go that far. Yes, as far as the words we've had so far and the types of endings, since we did do this in exercises, you should be able to tell whether something's first or second declension. You don't have to worry about third declension. But if you look at a form, you should be able to tell whether it's first or second. Okay? So, yes, you should be able to do that. Okay. Any other questions in Chapter 5? Okay, Chapter 6. First, he begins to discuss another classification for Greek nouns. In addition to the declensions, there's a classification into gender, the masculine, the feminine, and the neuter. And these classifications into gender don't necessarily correspond to any male or female connotations in themselves, although when words are obviously referring to men and women, there's a general parallel between the forms that nouns that refer to men are masculine, and nouns that refer to women are feminine, although there are a few exceptions that he notes here. But as far as the regular inanimate nouns are concerned, there's no implications either way. And then he takes a look again at in section 38 at the definite article and the fact that the definite article modifies its noun, agrees with its noun in case, number, and gender, and gives some examples here of sentence structures involving those mechanisms. Then by inspection we see a partial paradigm of the article on the top of page 35. And then looking at a few more examples where we include some neuter nouns, we see a more complete, but still not totally complete, paradigm for the definite article. And generally speaking here, the article in English corresponds, the presence of the definite article in English corresponds to the presence of the article in Greek. That we'll get some refinement on those rules, especially in the second year. And the lack of the article in Greek corresponds either to the indefinite article in English or just to no article at all. And the term for that is anarthrous. An anarthrous noun has no article. Okay, then looking at the top of page 36, he just puts it together here in the various declensions and adds the article to the paradigm here so you can see how they fit together. A masculine noun, second declension there, ho theos, ton theon, hoi theoi, tous theus. You see a rhyme pretty much along the line except for the first form there. And that's because the article takes endings that are second declension type endings for the masculines. So if your masculine, if your noun is a second declension masculine, since your article has got second declension type endings, they're going to rhyme pretty much. And then your feminines take first declension type endings. So hey, timay, tain, timain, hi, timai, tas, timas. They all rhyme there. And that's simply because the feminine nouns, the feminine form of the article is first declension type endings. And so if you've got a feminine first declension noun also, then there's going to be rhyme between them. And then your neuter here, to technon, ta techna. No distinction between the nominative and the accusative form, but there is a distinction between the singular and plural. And these second declension, this is a second declension neuter, actually. And the article takes second declension type endings. Okay, then a few more points here. I'm going to redo all of this section here in a little bit different way on the board here, so you'll maybe be able to pick up some things you didn't see here. Any questions on that part before I proceed? Okay, I'll try to come at this from another angle. Feminine nouns are the first declension which have alpha and alpha nu, and the nominative accusative singular are three types, examples of which are given below. So you have hei chera, hei cardia, hei glossa. And chera's got a roll as far as the ending of the stem. And so a roll or a vowel, if the stem ends in a roll or a vowel, you get alpha type endings in the first declension, and otherwise atus. And then there's some other kinds, like glossa, which also take alphas, and we don't have any real precise rules to predict when those things will occur. You just have to learn it as part of the vocabulary. But you know that if it's the stem ends in a row or a vowel, you'll always have alpha endings in a first declension. Now, then, there are instances in which you'll have masculine nouns of the first declension and feminine nouns of the second declension. The main thing to watch here is that because of that feature, the article will not rhyme in endings with the noun, because the article is not going to change. The article is fixed as far as masculine, feminine, and neuter are concerned. The masculine forms of the article are always the same. The feminine forms are always the same, and the neuter forms are always the same. But in the case of a noun, the noun may be, say, first declension, which is normally associated with feminine nouns, but there are masculine nouns of the first declension. So here we see ho mathe tes, ton mathe tain, hoi mathe tai, and tus mathe tas. The endings no longer rhyme. The vowels are different. And that's because mathe tes is a first declension masculine noun. Because it's masculine, the form of the article is fixed now. And because it's first declension, the endings on the noun are ada type endings. Now also you find an example of the next one here, hey hodos. Hodos is a second declension feminine noun. And so because it's feminine, the article form is going to be hey, tain, hi, and tas. But because it's second declension, the ending is going to be os, on, oi, and us. So you don't get a rhyme there. It's hey hodos, tain hodon, hi hodoi, and tas hodus. Okay, let's see if we can come at that a little bit different way. I want to give you kind of a review of this whole portion on nouns and endings. Now, what I would like, if you want, go ahead and make a paradigm of this. Just take down what I put on the board. But realize that we're going to be adding to this paradigm later. So you'll be making another one later, and which you'll put the genitive and the genitive and the dative forms in. So I don't want you to get too locked in on this particular paradigm set right now, because there'll be more coming to it later on. So as long as you're aware of that, this may serve as a study guide for you, a help for you in preparing for how to put all the stuff together. Okay. So this is a review on nouns and the endings on nouns that we've taken so far. Now, let's first of all state that there's two parts to all nouns. Number one, the root. We'll call it the root or the stem. There's several different terms. The root, the stem. And then there'll be endings. Part number two is the endings. So we have number one, the stem or root. And two, the endings. Now, the stem or the root may be one or more morphemes. If it's a monosyllabic word or something, it'll be one morpheme, but if it's got several syllables, oftentimes it'll be more than one. Then the ending is going to be two morphemes. Two morphemes in the ending for nouns. And we'll look at what those morphemes are a little bit later on, and we'll analyze a little bit more deeply. But basically, the morphemes for the endings include one morpheme that tells you the declension, another morpheme that tells you the case. But you don't need to worry about that in so much detail right now. So, but suffice it to say that all nouns will have endings indicating case and number. Every noun will have an ending indicating its case and number. And just an example of some nouns. I've got kera. This is the stem here, and this is the ending. Or anthropos. This is the stem, anthrop, and then os is the ending. Or thaos, again, this is the stem, and this would be the ending. The way to figure out what the ending is versus stem is just to know the paradigms and know the endings that go in that paradigm, and then you know where to make the dividing line. Okay. Now, these endings, these various endings, are divided into categories or groups called declensions. So declensions are the various groups, various categories under which these endings are formed. And for now, we're only going to be concerned with two of these categories, the first and the second declension. And declensions are only ways of making the endings. Okay, let's first of all look at the endings for the first declension. Yes?
On that first example, what were the two morphemes for the ending?
Well, it's a little bit hard to get two morphemes out of one letter. But actually, they are there. What we, the way that we'll see a little bit later on is the first morpheme, alpha, is indicating the declension. The second morpheme is what they call zero. Okay, and that indicates the case and number, case number seven.
Okay.
So on that particular one, it's a zero here.
Silent morpheme.
Yeah, silent morpheme. Okay. But you see, as you go through, then you'll have alpha nu, and you'll have alpha or and so forth. And so you'll see another portion there. But just consider the zero. It's artificial. I mean, what we're doing is just trying to set up a system for assigning values to these various things. So later on, we'll be breaking these things down, and that's the symbol that we'll use, a zero for the case number suffix in some cases. Okay? Good. Okay, endings for the first declension. I'm going to put all the first declension types together in one paradigm here so that we can see them and compare them. Because in the book, he kind of scatters them around. All right. So we'll go first the singulars, nominative, accusative, and then the plural, nominative, accusative. This is the order that you set up a paradigm in. Now, actually, there'll be genitive and dative in between here and genitive and dative in between here when we finish it. For now, we just got a kind of a partial paradigm. Okay. I'm going to put the whole word here. You know, so far, anyway. Okay. The endings, then, for the first declension. More room up here. First, we'll look at some feminine ones. And then some masculine ones. And this is only so far. Actually, we'll have another category for feminine ones when we get the genitive datives in. But for now, these are the kind you're aware of. There's the alpha types, where you have an alpha in the singular nominative, alpha nu in the singular accusative, alpha iota in the plural nominative, and alpha sigma in the plural accusative. So that's your paradigm for those types of feminines. Then there's another type that have eta. Eta in the singular nominative, eta nu in the singular accusative, alpha iota in the plural nominative, alpha sigma in the plural accusative. So notice that the difference in these various forms of feminine, this would be like chera, this would be like cardia. We have, no, excuse me, yeah, not chera, but what was the one they gave you for?
Timae.
Timae, okay, right. Okay, like Timae. And this would be like either chera or cardia or one of those. Now, we'll give you something like that rule in just a moment here when we get done. But notice that your differences between eta and alpha only occur in the singulars. In the plurals, these endings are the same. That's why it's nice to put them in a chart like this. You can see where the differences and the similarities are. Okay, then for the masculines, the book has only given you one set of endings so far, but there's actually two. And the other type doesn't occur all that frequently. But move this over a little bit here. We have the same kind of distinction here as we do with the feminines. We have the book gives you this type, the eta sigma, eta nu, alpha iota, alpha sigma. This is your first declension masculine, like dotes or mathetes. It's a masculine noun, first declension. And as far as the forms we have so far are concerned, the only variation between the masculine and the feminine is in the nominative form. This is eta sigma, whereas this is only eta. But you'll notice that on the eta types, they're the same endings all the rest of the way. So there's no difference except for in the nominative singular. We will notice that there will also be a difference in the genitive singular, but we'll get to that later on. Now, there's another set of endings on the masculines that's fairly infrequent, but it does occur, and I'll just make you aware of that. There are alpha sigma, alpha nu, alpha iota, alpha sigma. And really all that's happened here is, just like over here you had alpha types and eta types, there are alpha types of masculine first declensions as well. And they're far rarer, far less frequent. But Naonios is one, for example. And it's got the same pattern here, alphas instead of etas. And for the same basic reasons, the stem ends in a row or a vowel or something, then you'll get this alpha type occurring in the first declension masculines as well. Okay? So as far as we've seen so far, this is the paradigm for these masculines and feminines. Now, the rule as far as whether it's alphas or etas here, it's alpha if stem ends in rho or vowel, and some other time. We just tack that on as our undefined qualifier here. Every once in a while, with words like dope, sound, and blow, sound, and so forth, you get alpha types too. Yeah.
So same with the masculine.
Right. Same rule would apply here. Mm-hmm. Although I don't know about the some other times here because there aren't very many of these. The only ones I know about end in the vowel.
Okay. So this rule applies to singular nominative feminine.
Right. This rule applies directly to. And with a feminine first declension noun, or really with a masculine first declension noun, although you're not going to see it, have to apply it as often here. But like I said, there are some places where they get alphas too. But primarily, let's focus on this, and then realize that it applies to this too. That On your feminine first declension nouns, if the stem on that feminine noun ends in a roll or a vowel, for example, cardia, okay, the stem here, this is your ending and this is the stem. The stem ends in a vowel here. And the same with kera, okay, the stem ends in a roll. So if the stem ends in a roll or a vowel, you'll get all the type endings in the nominative singular and accusative singular, right? Whereas if the stem ends in, in anything else, like time ends in a mu, so that's going to be something else, and that's going to get an eight. Now, there are a few other similar times. The one example I gave you there was glosa, where you had a double sigma. And you would have predicted on the basis of what you know so far from this rule that that would be eta type, but it's alpha type anyway. But you'll find that it goes back to eta type in the genitive and data, so that's why they kind of separate out. It's kind of a mixed breed. It does different things in the nominative and accusative and does the genitive and data. Okay, we won't even tell you, but you forget you heard that for right now. We'll get to that later on. All right, any questions on first declension now? This is it as far as first declension is concerned. These are all as far as nominative and accusative is concerned anyway. Those are all the only differences in endings that you'll see. Okay, the only thing I added to this was this here, because he hasn't dealt with that in the book yet. It doesn't come all that frequently, but it's pretty easy to add in right here because it's the same thing that's happening over here. You either get alpha or eta there, and you get either alpha or eta here, but you get the same type of ending otherwise. And then notice that all of the plurals, regardless of whether it's feminine or masculine, regardless of whether it's eta or alpha, they all have the same endings in the plurals, which is nice. And that you will find is consistent with the genitive and datives too. So in the plurals, first declension is real nice. They're all the same, regardless. Okay, questions? Yes?
Yeah, I guess on that rule, then only applies in the singular nominative position, right?
No, this alpha versus eta will apply in all of the singular forms. Later on, we'll see it will apply to the genitive and dative also. That in the genitive and dative forms, you'll find alphas in some of them and etas in some of them. Just the same thing. Except for these other kind type. And in those types, you'll get alphas in the nominative and the accusative and etas in the genitive and dative. That's kind of a mixed breed. But other than that, these distinctions are going to carry through all the singular forms. So we just don't have all the singular forms yet. As far as you know, all you need to know for right now is that it takes care of the singular nominative and accusative, but we see it also apply to the genitive and dative. Question over there, Dan?
Singular forms
don't though, right? Right. Not plural. The plural forms, you'll never see any etas there. There will always be alphas, regardless of whether it's alpha or eta. There will always be etas. I mean alphas, excuse me. Okay. Now, second declension ending. I'll go ahead and leave this part up and put the second declension next to it. This is first declension. Okay. Singular nominative, singular accusative, plural nominative, plural accusative. Okay, in this one we've only really got two categories. There are masculine types or feminine, masculine or feminine. Mostly masculine, but there are feminines in that category. And then there's the neuters. Okay, the masculine and feminine second declension endings will have omicron sigma ending here, omicron nu, omicron iota, and omicron upsilon sigma. Os, on, oi, us. The neuters will have omicron nu, alpha, alpha. These are all called second declension. And the second declension masculines and feminines are identical. There's no difference between them. They're all characterized by alpha and omicron type of
thematic vowel, they call it. And the neuters are a little bit different in that they still got homochrome type sound, but here you get alphas in the plural. And the unusual feature for us to notice right now is that the accusative and nominative are the same, both plural and singular. Now, at first it may seem odd that we even call the second declension, since so far it only has one ending that parallels the second declension masculine to feminine. But when we fill out the rest of the paradigm and put the genitive and dative forms in, you'll see that the genitive and dative forms are the same as the genitive and dative forms for the masculine and feminine, and that's why we put it in the same declension. I think they just wanted to try to, you know, instead of having 5 or 6 or 10 declensions, I mean, you know, if you set up your grammar, you could call each one of these a different declension if you wanted, and call both different declensions. You could have a Greek student memorizing 5 or 10 declensions or something. But I think it facilitates memorization to try to see as many parallels as you can, put them all into similar groupings, and then notice slight variations within the groupings. Now, another thing you can do in comparing first and second declension is to notice some of the similarities between them. Notice on the first of all that we seem to be having a similarity here in the last letter between the masculine and the first declension. You've got sigma there, nu there, iota there, and sigma there. So that's pretty. There's a similarity there, and of course these forms are similar to even the feminine forms: nu, iota, sigma. You can also notice that the vowel seems to be an O type through here, except for in the plural. And here we have eta or alpha type. So it may cut down your memory load if you remember basically these distinctions. Notice also that in the singular accusative, all of the forms we've had so far end in the nu. So that nu is very indicative of the accusative singular. And you pick that up after a while. Even if you've forgotten where the paradigm is, you see the new there is telling you accusative. And sometimes you don't even know why. Okay? I mean, it's just been impressed on you by reading it over and over and over again. Any questions or observations about these paradigms? So, in order to tell what declension a noun is, you have to know what endings it's got. It's the endings on the noun that will determine the declension. The endings on the noun will not necessarily determine the gender, however, of course, because a noun like hodos is feminine, whereas a noun like theos has the same endings as masculine. So seeing an ending on a noun is not going to necessarily tell you that it's what its gender is, but it will tell you what its declension is. And over here, you might see eta nu on the ending of a noun, but it might be masculine or it might be feminine. So you can't really tell from the ending alone what the gender is. You have to use something else to tell you for sure what the gender is. And it may be able to help you eliminate, you know, if you saw eta nu, you know it's not neuter, but it could be either masculine or feminine. So it's not going to uniquely determine the gender, but it will determine the declension, in most cases. There are some cases where that will even be ambiguous. In most cases, it'll tell you what the declension is. Okay? Now, nouns are grouped into another classification, besides the declension, called gender. We've already addressed that to some extent, but let's look at it a little bit more closely. This classification called gender is most important in the grammatical device called concord. It's that device called concord where this gender thing plays an important role, because, as we'll see, adjectives that modify nouns will agree with them in case number and gender. And we'll also look later on at relative pronouns, which will do the same kind of thing. And oftentimes, the only thing that can really nail down for you what the antecedent of a relative pronoun is, in other words, what word in the previous context is being referred to by this pronoun, is the gender. So it does become a very important device. Now, nouns in Greek, of course, occur in three genders, masculine, feminine, and neuter. And there's no necessary sexual implications. Now, nouns are not inflected for gender, though. A noun is not inflected for gender, meaning this. Nouns will have different endings for case and number, but it will always be the same gender in all constructions. In other words, once a noun's gender is fixed, it doesn't change its gender. If a noun is a masculine noun, it's always a masculine noun. If a noun is a neuter noun, it's always a neuter noun, all throughout the paradigm.
It's not switching genders through the paradigm someplace. Now, there will be some nouns that have the same root but have different endings that will indicate different endings or even separate declension endings depending on what the gender is. For example, there's adelphos, which means brother, and there's adelphe, which means sister. But those are two separate nouns, even though they've got the same common element to them. They're two separate nouns. And adelphos is always masculine, and adelphe is always feminine. And it's always hey adelphe and ho adelphos. And they don't change their gender. If you change the gender, you change the noun, as it were. Okay? So we're not going to see any inflections for gender. The noun is going to be fixed as far as its gender is concerned. And all of its constructions will be the same. And so that means when a noun is learned, when you learn, memorize or add a new noun to your vocabulary, you learn the gender with the noun. And the gender is a fixed part of it. So in the vocabularies, you'll see ho theos. That's the way you'll learn it. Or hey adelphe, or whatever. You'll learn it as you'll learn the form of the article with the noun to determine what the gender is. And as I indicated there, the best way to learn the gender is to learn the form of the article that goes with the noun. The form of the article is the only way you'll be able to unambiguously determine what the gender is, because the form of the article is consistent with the gender, and even though the endings may not be consistent with gender, because they are lining up according to declension, it's a different category, the article form will line up, and you'll be able to uniquely determine what the gender is. Now, terminology, a noun with the article is called articular, and a noun without the article is called anarthrous. We put those words on the board earlier for you, just for review here. So the article, then, agrees with its noun in case, number, and gender, all three categories. The article will agree with its noun in case, number, and gender. Case refers to nominative, genitive, dative, accusative. In other words, that determines how it functions within the sentence. Number, of course, is just singular or plural. And gender, masculine, feminine, or neuter. So that means you're going to have quite a few different forms for the article. I mean, if there's two numbers, singular and plural, if there is three different genders and four cases, you know, you multiply 3 times 4 times 2, you get 24 different forms of the article, and that's how many there are. And when we complete our paradigm, we'll see all 24. Right now, we'll just be contented with what we've got here. 3 times 4, we've only got 12. We've only got half the paradigm here. So we'll just take it a half at a time. But that's how many different forms for the article there will be, because you're getting a different form for the article to govern each of these different characteristics. Was it? Yes, Glenn?
I wanted to ask, it seems that
on
masculine nouns, the first declension, doesn't that deny the concord? Because you get
both on an
eta ending, you know, seems to be a dissimilation.
Yes. It's, the difference there is there's really no breakup of the concord. The concord's all right. The problem is that the endings don't rhyme simply because the declensions differ. There's a difference in declension, but the rule of concord has to do with gender, not with declension. And so there doesn't have to be any concord between the declensions. In other words, the form of the article on ho mathetes, the article is in the second declension, whereas the ending is in the first declension. But the gender is the same. The gender is masculine for both of them.
So
the concord is in the gender.
According to the declension.
Right. There's no concord in the declension. Right. There's no concord in the declension, but there is concord in the gender. Right. And that's the only area where the concord is going to apply when you're relating adjectives to nouns, and the article could be considered a type of adjective. That it's only with regard to gender, not with regard to declension. I'm glad you brought that point up, because that's a good way to put it. This concord rule is dealing only with the gender, not with the declension, and therefore there will not necessarily be a rhyme between those endings. There will be concord in the sense of the gender, but not a rhyme in the sense of the actual same sound, because the declensions will differ. And that will especially be important in masculine nouns of the first declension and in feminine nouns of the second declension. There again, hey, ho, dos. They don't rhyme, but there is concord there, because ho, dos is a feminine noun and hey is the feminine form of the article. So the declensions are different. The articles in the first declension type ending,
the noun is in the second declension type ending, but nevertheless there's concord because the gender is the same. Okay? So concord deals only with gender. Yes?
I hear what you're saying, and I understand what you said, but really isn't there concord in the declension? Because if you take a first declension and stick a first declension article, if you put a second declension article, you're out of concord. I mean, not an article, but if you make up an article and you put a masculine instead of feminine.
Okay, well, see, what you've just done when you said masculine versus feminine, you've gone back to a gender distinction again.
Okay.
See, so it's really the gender that's making the distinction. It's not really the declension that's making the distinction. You've got to make sure that the genders are right. That's the important thing. And the endings will not necessarily rhyme at all.
Because the articles really don't have the word declension.
No, not really. All we can really say about the article is, see, all of those, the article is just really one word, and it's got 24 different forms. And it declines, and it happens to, the endings for the masculine just happen to be the second declension type endings that we associate with nouns. It's not really technically accurate to say that the article is in any declension, because actually the forms of the article are either second declension or first declension, depending on what gender it is. So it's not really in any given declension. It's got endings like second declension and endings like first declension, depending on the gender. But it's still all the article, In other words, hey and ho are two different forms of the same word. The word is the article. And hey is the form that goes on feminine nouns, and ho is the form that goes on masculine nouns, and nominative, and to is the form that goes on neuter nouns. So it's best to think of the article as just one word that has all these different forms. It inflects for case, number, and gender. Whereas the noun does not inflect for gender. It doesn't have different endings for masculine or feminine within a given noun. The article will, because it's going to be stuck onto all kinds of nouns. All right? Let's put down the paradigm for the article then. And let's see. Maybe I'll put it over here so we don't have to raise this, because I'd like to be able to see them all at the same time. Okay, this is for the article now. Okay, now for the article, since it's inflected for case, number, and gender, we're going to have to put categories for all of those. So for our case, we'll put nominative, an accusative, singular, and then to get the number distinction here, we've got nominative, accusative, plural. Okay, and now since we have a gender distinction also, we're going to have masculine, feminine, and neuter forms of the article will be attached to those genders of nouns. Okay, for the masculine, it's ho, and for the accusative, it's tone. For the nominative, it's hoi. For the accusative, it's tus. And I can go ahead and put an accent on these. There's no accent on these forms here. These are what are called enclitics. We'll get to them later on, but there's no accent on them. Then for the feminine, it's hey in the nominative, tain in the accusative singular, hi in the nominative plural, and tot, accusative plural. Now, when you actually see these words on a noun, you'll notice that the accent often slants the other way. It's only because of the certain accent rules that are involved in that. I won't get into it right now. Okay, then we have toe for the neuter, toe, ta, and ta. See, that's the paradigm for the, or at least a half of the paradigm for the article. When we get the genitive and accusative, genitive and dative forms, they'll fit in between this line and these two and these lines. Then we'll have the total paradigm, and that'll be 24 total forms. So far we've got 12 forms. Three genders, two cases each so far, and two numbers. Okay? Now, you'll notice then that if you compare the masculine form of the article with your second declension masculine or feminine endings over there, they're pretty much the same except for the nominative form. We've got ho over here, but we've got os there. But then we've got ton, and we've got hoi, oi, and tus, and us. So they're rhyming pretty well. And the feminine form of the article, heitain haitat, is very similar to the Ada types in the feminine chart there, a, ein, I, ah. So you can see the same rhyming type scheme. And then the neuters, to, to, ta, ta, very similar to over here, a little bit. Now you've got on, on, ah, there. So you've got a new there that you don't have over here, but there's a similarity there that maybe can cut down the memory load for you. I'm trying to remember how these paradigms fit.
So I think it would be wise for you at this point in the game to commit these things to memory as far as they go, recognizing we're going to be adding to them. But it won't hurt you to memorize these as they are and just recognize that there's some more that's going to go in there. Okay, Tony.
Question. Why, I haven't heard anything yet to tell me why it's called a nominative, but why it's called a nominative.
Oh, okay.
Where do you mean?
Chapter 7 that we just got started with is going to be used to try to refine that. But the mention so far, I think he mentioned it here. Remember when we had that sentence, Hilaron dotein agavahotha os, that example? What he was showing you there is that it's this distinction on the inflections in the cases that determine what's the subject and what's the object. So let me put it this way for now. Nominative means it's the subject of the sentence. Accusative means it's the direct object. Okay, now there are some other uses too, but they're very similar, they're related. So if you can, for now, I think the safest thing for now, associate nominative with the subject of the sentence and associate accusative with the direct object. Now there are some other refinements to the grammar. There are cases in what we call predicate nominatives. There are cases in which we'll have double accusatives and other things too, and object complements and so forth. We get a lot of fun with that, but they're not as difficult as they sound. But basically, in a sentence, simple declarative sentence, average run-of-the-mill sentence, in Greek, you're looking out for these nominative endings because they're going to indicate what the subject is. Regardless of where they fall in the sentence, they'll be the subject. Even if they're at the end of the sentence, they'll be the subject if they're in the nominative case. And if something's in the accusative case, it'll be the direct object regardless of where it is in the sentence. So, for example, with the os, if I wanted to say some sentence in which the os was the object, in which the os was the subject and did something, then I would use the form theos, because that's the nominative form. If, on the other hand, I wanted to make some statement about men loving God or something like that, then God would be the direct object, and I would put God in the accusative case, theon, to transmit that information. Okay? So this is the reason why a person, when he looks at the Greek text, sees spellings that are different than what he saw in his lexicon. Because the spellings he sees in the text are inflected for these various functions within the sentence. Whereas the lexicon gives only the dictionary form, only gives the nominative and singular form. You know, you get this happen with somebody that doesn't know enough about Greek to know what's happening. And I'm reading along, and I'll tell the students that the Greek word here is theos. And he's looking at his inner linear, and he sees theou. And he thinks, oh no, the teacher's made a mistake. You know, if it says theou here, it doesn't say theos. But what he doesn't realize is that ooh is just the genitive singular form of the dictionary form. You normally give the dictionary form when you're giving the word. So that's the reason. You're going to see these things occur in many different forms in their real natural habitats, you might say. Okay.
Now, these two classifications of nouns, gender and declension, overlap. In other words, as you can see here, within the first declension, we've got both feminine and masculine nouns. Within the second declension, we've got masculine, feminine, and neuter nouns. So the categorizations overlap. I mean, you can have a feminine second declension or a feminine first declension. Or you can have a masculine first declension, masculine, feminine declension, second declension. In other words, it would be nice if all first declension nouns were feminine and all second declension nouns were masculine and so forth, and that they lined up that way, but they don't. So these categorizations overlap. Now, in general,
most of your first declension, I'll just give you some general distinctions here, but don't take these as absolute because they're not. In general, most first declension nouns are feminine. The majority are feminine. But some are masculine, like homotetes and dotes and a number of others in that category. There's a whole group, there's a whole certain type of them that are masculines. But the vast majority of your first declension nouns are feminine in gender. Also, in general, most second declension nouns are masculine or neuter. Most of your second declension nouns are masculine or neuter. But some are feminine. There's a few feminines, like hey hodos and hey ampelos. Not a lot of them, but there's enough of them where you have to pay attention to it. So the majority of your second declension nouns are masculine and neuter. The majority of your first declension nouns are feminine. And that's about all we can say. So to summarize this, for any given noun, three things need to be known when you're learning a noun. You need to know the basic word itself, the root and the stem of the word. You need to know the gender, which is determined by the article. So you have to learn the article with it. And then you need to know the declension. And that's determined by the set of endings that it takes. So you look at the endings to determine the declension. So when you memorize a noun, you're concerned with three things: the root, the gender, and the declension. To give you a few examples, we're almost out of time here. Maybe I can put one on the board, and then tomorrow I'll give you a few more examples and look at it more carefully. Can I erase this? Everybody have this, okay? Okay. John, question?
The key then is to know the article, because that tells you the gender.
Right.
And the only way you're going to be certain of the declension is if you know the gender. Is that...
No, no. That last part is where you missed it. You can be certain of the gender by knowing the article, but you can't necessarily be certain of the declension just by knowing the article.
Right, but the article is going to give you the gender, and therefore you'll be able to determine from that which declension is in, because you look at the endings and know the gender.
Okay, well, oh, I see what you're saying in a certain sense of the word. You're kind of coming at it from another direction here. But I think I'd rather have you think of it this way. Think of it, when you learn the article, you're finding out what the gender is.
Right.
But it's not until you look at the endings on the noun that you're going to know what the declension is. Actually, you don't even need to know what the article is at all. If you see the endings on it and are also given the genitive form of the ending, because that will uniquely determine it. You don't really, that's the part we haven't really got to yet. See, what's happening is you're using information from the gender and your knowledge of the paradigms coupled with the knowledge of the endings to try to uniquely define it. But actually, there's a more accurate, precise way of doing it, and that's by learning the genitive form. Once you know the genitive form, that will uniquely determine the declension, not any other knowledge. So we're kind of a little bit ahead of it here.
So yeah. If you run into an anarchist mm-hmm. context,
yes.
You're not always going to know, be able to determine.
Right. When you run into an anarchist noun, you will not necessarily know its gender. You should be, in most cases, you'll be able to determine its declension. Now, in some cases, you can't do that. If it's a nominative form or something, there can be some confusion in some cases. But generally, you're going to know its declension, but you won't necessarily know its gender unless you've got the article on it. Now, most of the time, though, there'll be an adjective modifying or something else. The adjective will tell you the declension. They tell you the gender also, because it does the same thing as the article does. Okay, well, we didn't get time to do this, but tomorrow I'll show you what dictionary forms of nouns look like and what information is given to you in the lexicons for that. So we'll wait, dig into that tomorrow. Go ahead and look over these things tonight if you want to, and make sure that everything's understandable to you, so that tomorrow will be the last day before the test, so I want to be able to take any questions that you have and spend enough time. We're going a little slower here at the beginning, but that's I'd rather take a little slow and get you all on board so that we can start moving. So if you get this basic concept down that we're dealing with right now, everything else is going to be following along those same concepts, and it'll flow pretty smooth.
Efficient technical preparation is an asset to unity. Sloppy musicianship goes beyond not being prepared, but like not singing with proper diction, not using proper tone production, being lackadaisical in your approach. It's kind of like what we talked about before, about not having a serious attitude. Singing or playing or musically producing below par devastates unity, devastates musicianship. And I have a whole choir that does it from time to time. And I've got to stomp on them, you know, so to speak, in a nice sort of way, like, wait a minute, you're not giving it all, come on, give it to me, and work them a little bit, and then usually shake themselves and go on. But sloppy musicianship is devastating to unity, and never forget that. Okay, next week we will proceed a touch further. What is the date next week? The 6th, 15th.
It's signatory on your legal document here. Let's get this more over. Put the listen to the first 10 minutes.
Okay.
Do we have to turn that in separately?
No. Just make sure that you listen to it, that's all.
Okay.
Okie dokie.
Last time, you said, right? That's his daughter.